Welcome, everybody, to another episode of PeterDAO's Longevity Journal Club. This is a space for longevity enthusiasts to share knowledge and to talk about the latest advances on the field. I'm your host, Stefano Pinilla. I'm a postdoc at Aarhus University in Denmark, and I'm a member of PeterDAO. PeterDAO, for all of you that are not familiar with it,
it's an open community to fund translational
research. Oh, we have Jane here. So, Alex, I think I'm having some problems with giving her access to be echo host, but if you can do it, that would be great. Hi, Jane. Oh, you're not in the... Ah, you're not yet. But well, anyway, just introducing PeterDAO. We are an open collective funding longevity research. So if you are a scientist looking for funding, just DM us and we can give you more information on how to apply. And if you're a person that has a cool project that wants to introduce to us because you think it would be cool to see it funded, please do it. I'm sharing right now a tweet in the Nest, that is this part over the space, where you can actually refer us some project and receive some nice bounties. I hope you can see it. It seems that I'm having some issues, so hopefully the tweet will appear soon. And hi, Jane, welcome.
Hello, how are you doing?
Fine, fine. It's been a little bit chaotic. Discord is down. We're running around in circles. But now let's get it on. And yeah, a small disclaimer before we continue. You can see that this space is being recorded. So if you ask any question or if you participate, you are consenting to be recorded. And of course, the content provided here is for educational purposes only and does not constitute basically medical advice. And with that out of the way, hi Jane, again, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sorry, I'm just finding a quiet space. So everyone, my name is Jane, I'm an MD PhD student. I love immunology and immuno-oncology. I did my undergrad at Penn, where Joel's from, and I also have a little bit of experience with CAR T cells. So this paper I thought was so cool. I'm really excited to talk about it today. So Joel, would you like to unmute yourself and say hello?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm more than happy you guys are interested in our work and, you know, really excited to share more about it.
Yeah. Just to introduce Joel, he's the first author of the paper we are discussing today that is entitled CAR T cells produced in vivo to treat cardiac injury. And he gave me some points to introduce him. I think it's cool to introduce him. It sounds good. So yeah, he grew up in the Pacific Northwest of the United States. He studied molecular biology and history at George Fox University, and he started his academic research in neurodevelopment at Oregon Health and Science University. And also he studied a little bit cardiac development in Seattle, and then he moved to Washington University for 2 years to study in signaling and protein trafficking. And now he's a fourth year PhD candidate at John Epstein's lab at the University of Pennsylvania. And well, I think as Jane was saying, this paper is amazing. I am very curious how you became involved with this research.
Yeah, thanks for the introduction. I joined John's lab at a very serendipitous time. We do three different rotations where you kind of test out a lab to see if you fit in the culture and enjoy the mentor and the project before selecting a lab. And in that amount of time, I was involved in doing the revision experiments for our original anti-activated fibroblast CAR T project in heart failure that came out a few years ago. And from then on, I was pretty much hooked. And this project, we can talk about in a few minutes, and why you know, we went in the whole technological development angle as opposed to just an application, was born out of the desire to have a transient CAR T cell. So we and others have done, you know, a fair bit of work using transient mRNA to make these cells outside of the body in a dish in the lab. And we asked our, you know, who quickly became our collaborator, Drew Weissman, who's one of the world's experts on mRNA and mRNA-based vaccines, if he could help us make some RNA so that we could test it out. And he basically said, sure, why don't we go one step further? We have been developing some of this chemistry in our lab, so why don't we just try that as well? And pretty much ever since, it's been me trying to ride the avalanche of keeping up with the project.
Yeah, that's awesome. And for listeners that might not be familiar, what Joel is describing is basically the technology that underlies the COVID vaccines, that is these lipid nanoparticles, these droplets of fat that you can use to put some messenger RNA that is kind of the instruction to make proteins into cells. You decided to apply that to heart fibrosis.
Right. So go for it.
No, sorry. It's because you've mentioned a previous paper that is, it was in 2019, mm-hmm. I think was published in Nature, also yep. quite cool, using this approach of CAR T cells that I think actually, Jane, would you mind explaining a little bit? We have a slide on it, but we are touching in a lot of complex.
Absolutely, yeah.
So if you would mind to give a summary.
So in general, I think that Joel's paper is so fascinating for two reasons. One, CAR T cell therapy, which I think Joel can probably explain a bit more as we go through the figures, but it's been a revolutionary way to target cancer. So. You know, there's a famous patient, if anyone's curious looking her up, her name is Emily Whitehead. She was cured of her leukemia, and now she's 10 years cancer-free, and it's really a truly remarkable story. It's like one of the greatest successes we've had in, you know, biology in a very long time. So CAR T-cells is like a revolutionary new therapy that's been used, and it started off with its origins, actually in HIV, and mostly it's been known for its success as a cancer therapeutic. And now we're moving into this realm where, well, why don't we make CAR T cells against other pathologies as well, such as cardiac fibrosis. So number one, I think there's a really interesting, just phenomenal of repurposing CAR T cell therapy for other organ systems. Joel, did you want to say something?
No, I think that's a great introduction. And, you know, the first few cases of leukemia are a fantastic achievement. Built upon decades of research from, you know, all around the world. Just in case we didn't define it, CAR, the C-A-R stands for chimeric antigen receptor. And this is a totally artificial way of delivering and targeting a T cell to a specific cell that you would like to eliminate. So on cancer cells, for leukemia, it's CD19, and you can use this CAR receptor that we engineer in the lab to selectively eliminate that pathologic cell. Just in case anyone wants the most broadest definition of a CAR, you know, and so we can change out what we're targeting the T cell towards. And T cells are then identifying selectively these target cells and killing them just as they do for invading pathogens.
Yeah, that's a great description. The way I think about CAR T cells are like making your own cellular army against whatever you want. So T cells are like your soldiers, and then CAR is like you're telling them where to attack and what to attack. So you can build engineer your own cell army. So it's super cool. You can talk about it for days, I'm sure. But number one, like I think this repurposing CAR T cell therapy for other pathologies such as cardiac fibrosis, that opens up a whole broad, you know, like world of possibilities, if you will. And number two, which I think is mm-hmm. the what you mentioned briefly, Joel, like the technology that you developed, is that you're able to generate CAR T cells in vivo. And that is also, and so in vivo means like within like a living organism. So right now, as it stands, CAR T cell therapy, you take patients' T cells out of their body. So you just take, you know, you take out T cells from the blood, and then you re-engineer them in the lab and you put them back into a patient. It's incredibly expensive. It's time consuming, but it's the way that things were done. This was, you know, pioneering the future. Joel's paper is really fascinating because here they're saying, well, why don't we repurpose a technology? So using this lipid nanoparticle system loaded up with mRNA to make these CAR T cells within like a living system itself. So they did it in mice. So instead of using this process of taking out the cells, putting them in the lab, putting it back into like a mouse, they're just saying, well, we're going to engineer CAR T cells right in the mouse, which is a huge step forward. And I think that's what's really exciting here. I know, Joel, if you wanted to say anything else.
Yeah, no, I think you nailed all of the key points. It's really exciting because, you know, CAR T cell, as it currently is implemented in the clinic, and it's FDA approved for a number of different cancers at this point, but it's fundamentally limited by its lack of manufacturing scalability. There are many, many labs around the world working on how to make a standard cell product that could be made in bulk in a centralized facility and then shipped out to various different recipients. But so far, those cells have elicited immune reactions when you try to inject them. So you have to take the patient's own T cells and make a custom product just for that person. One of the, you know, there are many different safety concerns along with that. And, you know, this new mRNA delivery system, while it opens up some new safety concerns, it also helps to eliminate a lot of different aspects and hurdles to current CAR T therapy.
Yes. And I think that's like targeting, as you were saying, one of the main issues with CAR T cells. And I'm actually I think that deciding on using it on fibrosis was quite of an interesting choice, because it has been used as I've shared a figure in slide 2. You can see that there has been CAR T have been repurposed, as Jane said, to target different kinds of cells besides cancer cells that were the original, like senescent cells. This great paper by Corina Moore, I don't remember if it was in Nature, and you had this previous one in fibrosis. And I would like to explain a bit what fibrosis and heart fibrosis, that is the issue and that you are targeting with this paper. Basically, what happens with heart fibrosis, like what happened with fibrosis in general, is that it's kind of like healing going wound healing going crazy, and you get these increasing production of fibers around the cells that end up limiting the function of the organ, in this case, the heart. And this is done by these cells called fibroblasts, that are basically cells that are in charge of making the fibers that are around and surrounding cells in the tissue. And they kind of become overactive and start expanding these extracellular space until they limit the function of other cells. And this happened with aging, it happens with continuous injuries. And then in the heart, of course, that creates a problem, because it basically help, like make contraction more difficult, relaxation of the heart to get the blood more difficult, and can make cardiovascular disease much worse and injury, and it kind of like make injury worse. And
that's a great summary.
Yeah, for aging, of course, that is what we are mainly interested in this journal club. This is of course important, because Cardiovascular disease is one of the main causes of death among the aging population in humans. So I think it was a really, really interesting choice.
And one other point that I will add to that is a great introduction. Actually, two points. One is that this is a common mechanism of organ dysfunction across the body, not just in the heart. And then the second thing I'll add is that the fibroblasts come in many different flavors. You can think of them as different, you know, they're all similar, but they're different enough in function and in a molecular appearance, or which protein sets that they express at any given time. And what we take advantage of is that the real pathogenic, you know, disease-causing fibroblast is not all fibroblasts. And we can selectively distinguish between the normal, good, the healthy, the young fibroblasts that are positive, and leave those behind, leave them untargeted. They can, you know, grow and maintain the tissue as normal. We are only selectively killing those disease-causing small subset of what we call activated fibroblasts.
Yeah, that's super cool, because as you say, you wouldn't want to target the others. They are important for wound healing. If we get this kind of consistent inhibition of all fibroblasts, probably that would be, at the end, fibrosis is happening because of some initial injury that you actually want to put a brake on. So I think that is really cool. And here, sorry, I was thinking of some other thing, but yeah, in your point with concerning these activated fibroblasts, you have also mentioned before that one of your goals with these is having a transient creation of CAR T cell. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that? Because that also is quite important concerning safety.
Yeah, absolutely. So traditional CAR T cell therapy, as Jean touched on earlier, is against cancer, where you really want to eliminate every cancer cell. You want to eliminate any future cancer cells, and you want constant surveillance for any form of reactivation of cancer cells. And so to achieve this, those types of CAR T cells are manufactured with a permanent genetic integration of the instructions to make that custom antigen receptor, so that those T cells and all of their descendants and all future T cells that arise out of those will forever target the cancer cells. But as Stefano and others have said, you know, it is normal to have activated fibroblasts. If you have a wound in your skin or you have a heart attack, you definitely need the activated fibroblasts to respond, to make extracellular matrix, to hold especially the heart, but also other organs, to really maintain the structural integrity. I think of them as kind of like the structural scaffolding surrounding a building while it's being built or renovated. So during the acute phase of injury, you need that scaffolding to keep the organ properly functioning. But after the renovations are complete, you actually want the building and not the scaffolding so much anymore. And only in the chronic phases of injury where this excess extracellular matrix becomes problematic. So we wanted a transient CAR T cell, unlike the cancer applications that would go in, would remove the scaffolding in its chronic form, but then disappear, so that if you get another acute injury, either in your heart or somewhere else, there is not a CAR T cell hanging around that would eliminate that activated fibroblast. And so that's why we turned to mRNA, because this is the messenger intermediate between the genomic information and still carries the instructions to make proteins. And it's chronically unstable and never really enters the nucleus. So you'll get expression for us. We get expression of the CAR T as a protein for about 48 hours, where we'll have functional CAR Ts. And then after that, the mRNA degrades, the protein is normally turned over, and the T cell will go back to just being a T cell.
Yeah, that's super cool. And yeah, it's a very smart way of achieving this transient effect. I actually think it's super, super interesting, because yeah, I don't know exactly for how long regular CAR T approaches can be around. I don't know actually if that has been studied. Maybe Jane has some more idea about that.
First shot, but
yeah, Joel, go ahead. You unmute yourself.
Sure. So there, just about 2 weeks ago, Carl June and Bruce Levine published on those first patients that Jane referenced earlier, and this is 10 years later. They still are disease-free, and they still have circulating CAR T cells from a single injection over 10 years ago, and we have no reason to believe that they will not continue to persist.
It's really amazing. The concept in the, I guess, the landscape of cancer, like, you want memory T cells to hang out and make sure that if there's any like recurrence of tumor, is that, you know, your CAR T cells can go off and, like, you know, take care of any residual disease. I mean, there are studies where some people will unfortunately relapse and their cancer is now different. So we know that could also have implications on selective pressures. When you're using, you know, a T cell, CAR T cell therapy for something like fibrosis, like, you don't really want them hanging around for a long time, as you mentioned, like, Joel, that we want those, like, good fibroblasts hanging around. And honestly, like, I was so surprised, pleasantly surprised to see that even with 48 hours, so only of 2 days of CAR expression, you seem to get pretty, like, nice results in your data. Were you surprised by that too?
Yes. Yeah. I'm still, frankly, quite surprised that this whole system works. I mean, it's frankly kind of crazy to me. I think there is a very small number of really pathogenic fibroblasts. And so we don't need to kill the very large quantity of cells like we do in a blood cancer and leukemias. And so we don't need, you know, tons of cells. We probably don't have a ton of lysed or killed activated fibroblasts. And that really just taking out a few of the worst offenders really does show such a dramatic benefit. But yes, I was very surprised to see that it works. I think the other thing I'll mention is that we are not the first ones to consider using RNA to make CAR T cells. That has been done by numerous other people throughout the various CAR T fields. What we really took advantage of is the LNP delivery system, and that we can attach a targeting antibody. In our case, it's CD5. This is an antibody on the outside of the lipid nanoparticle, as you can see in this diagram that Stefano has shared. So then in the top left, these LNPs are lipid nanoparticles containing the red mRNA. On the outside, you can see that little Y-shaped structure as a targeting antibody. And that recognizes and adheres to CD5, which is a protein that is expressed normally across a lot of different T cells. This will then tell the T cell to drag the LNP and its cargo into the cytoplasm, where it's then released and translated as the CAR. So it's this, what we refer to as targeted LNP. This is the real reason why we can just inject a single vaccine-like product into the bloodstream and end up with functional T cells. Because normally lymphocytes of all kinds don't really accept foreign genetic material, which is a good thing evolutionarily. We don't want your T cells and your B cells and your macrophages to just express anything that they take up, presuming they, you know, accept and eliminate most pathogens. You don't really want them to be expressing pathogen genes. So they're a bit hard to get information into so that they'll actually express a functional protein to do your chosen business. For us, it's making a CAR T cell. And the delivery mechanism is quite special, and I'm honestly surprised that it works and that the T cells don't just degrade degrade the LMP without letting the RNA out. But it's, you know, this is a long, long history of LMP chemistry development that I am in no means an expert in, and I have only taken advantage of and borrowed from this long line of talented researchers.
Yeah, like Newton said, we see further standing on the shoulders of giants. So Bingo. Definitely science is super collaborative. So it's really cool that we can just keep building together. And yeah, like all the pioneers that did LMPs, and now you're able to, and like then they're, you know, the pioneers at Penn that did CAR T, and now that we're all putting it all together, and now you're having this like really cool paper in the end and the product.
Exactly.
Stefano, did you unmute yourself? Oh, sorry, Joe, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to build. I completely agree, Jane, and I'm really excited to see where people take this concept and take it beyond what we have considered and what we have thought about, because inevitably other people will use this as the basis of what they're pulling together for their system. And that's really exciting to me.
Yeah, it's really cool. I just wanted to add to that, that actually it works like magic, and it's quite impressive that it does. And also when you look, like we don't have that figure in the Twitter thread, but when you look at figure 2 in the actual paper, you can see the percentage of splenocytes that that accept those LMPs. Right. You have a quite nice experiment showing, okay, we put these green fluorescence, we make this system so they express green fluorescence if they accept the LMPs, and it's like almost 75% right. of T cells CD4 and CD8 positive. So it's actually it works really, really well. It's right. actually impressive.
Yeah, and it's impressive to me how many T cells it really does hit. You know, for that particular experiment, you only need a few functional proteins. There's a number, and I don't quite know what it is. It's a bit elusive, but there's an amount of CAR proteins that have to be on the surface of every T cell in order for that T cell to be functional. And we were a bit afraid that we would get delivery of a few molecules, but not enough to make a functional CAR T cell. And there are some mRNA tricks to help boost expression. But at this point, with the data that we have published, it seems as though we might have too much expression, and we might even want to tone it down a little bit and spread it out over a couple of days instead of, you know, too strong of a wave.
Okay, that's super cool. And actually that comes to the next figure I'm going to share, where you show actually how these CAR T cells, because just to sum up a little bit, at this point of what we've discussed, okay, your collaborators designed these LNPs that allowed these lipid nanoparticles that allowed to deliver the instructions, the messenger RNA, specifically to T cells to kind of tell them how to make this receptor so they can target, like kill specifically these activated fibroblasts that are, for the listeners that just joined, like, these cells that are creating fibers, over creating fibers in response to an injury, and at the end of the day, they damage the tissue because of so many fibers. So I think I've just shared this figure where you basically show that these T cells, these immune cells, once they take these instructions, they are able to actually attack. And actually, the figure in the paper is quite nice, and you can see it all in the nested tweet. This is like the image of a crime of like the T cells actually eating the cells expressing these receptors.
Yeah, this is the crime scene. Yeah, this was incredible to me. So this particular process is known as trogocytosis, which comes from the Greek word to gnaw on, or like to bite off a little piece. So classically, CAR T cells and T cell function in general is thought to be you engage with the target receptor, and then you release a bunch of perforins and granzymes that will then lyse or destroy the membrane of the target cell. And then the cell basically implodes on itself. But I made this crazy observation, which is in this figure that you have displayed, that we end up seeing our antigen, so FAP, the thing that's on the activated fibroblast, that ends up in the spleen of these animals that are injured. And it's not expressed in the spleen in any way that we can find. So what we think is happening is this process called trogocytosis, where the CAR T cell goes to the heart where these activated fibroblasts are. And just like what's in pink in this picture, the T cells engage and they actually bite off a piece of the target cell while it's killing that target activated fibroblast. And then it holds on to that information or that antigen and circulates back through the circulatory system into the lymph nodes in the spleen. And it will hang out in the spleen for weeks. With the mRNA-based CAR T, it degrades much quicker than that because the CAR is gone as well. But with the classically, genetic integration of the CAR, so for the types of therapies that are in the cancer clinic, those cells will retain a piece of the killed or targeted cell in the both on the surface and in what we call puncta or small spots within the CAR T cell. This is one of the craziest things that I've come across. Honestly, it's one of my favorite parts of the paper. And I still am amazed that it happens. I now am filled with so many different ideas of what this could possibly mean. Does this have any knock-on effects or downstream implications for CAR T therapy? There's so many different opportunities, and it's just such a great, I don't know, I love this figure. It's one of my favorites. And I had to actually fight my boss to put it in the paper and not just save it for something else. And I'm glad it actually made it in.
Yeah, I was also super intrigued by this. And for anyone listening, the way that T cells work in general, just basic T cell biology, is that you have T cells, they're in the blood, but they like to hang out in certain parts, you know, like talk to their friends, be like, hey, I saw this pathogen, like maybe you want to like check out this pathogen too, or like this antigen. Antigen is like what they're targeting. So that's why we talk about lymph nodes and spleen, because those are major hubs where T cells hang out when they're not flowing through the body. So I thought this was super interesting. It was like the trogocytosis phenomenon, because you don't really see this in traditional like CAR T cell therapy for leukemia. And just like, right. They're kind of like ripping it off and they're keeping a piece of the bounty for themselves.
So. Yeah, it's really phenomenal. This process, trogocytosis, has been shown in normal immunology. It's also been shown in other organisms and other single-celled organisms. And it's been seen in some aspects of CAR T biology, although it has not been well worked out. And I think selfishly, I'm at a bit of an advantage in that respect, because FAP is never supposed to be in the spleen. Whereas a lot of the work on CAR T biology that's beyond does it work for this disease? A lot of that other type of immunologic work has been done with the CD19 CAR, which is the CAR that's FDA approved and approved around the world for certain types of leukemia or blood cancers. And the spleen and the lymph nodes are full of blood. They're full of, you know, this is where that protein is supposed to be. And so it's very hard to distinguish between, you know, that protein being there because it's a part of the trogocytosis phenomena, or whether it's just naturally there. And so I think this, you know, the whole idea of activated fibroblasts in the heart, and then we can look in the lymph node and look in the spleen for this interesting, fascinating biology is part luck, I think, more than anything else, in that, you know, it's easier to distinguish because it's never there without both the injury and the CAR T cells. So, Jane, to directly speak to your point, I think it is happening a lot more than we recognize in CAR T therapy. It just flies under the detection radar and kind of, it's not obvious to scientists to read it out. But if we look specifically for it, I'll bet we'll find a lot more interesting biology there.
Yeah, that's a beautiful insight. You're so right. It's kind of like when you, like, you know, you start playing around with nature, you kind of worry, like, well, we don't want to play around with it too exactly. much. We kind of want to know what we're doing.
Right. Or you never know.
Go ahead.
It could be benefiting therapy in ways that we don't understand. Just because we haven't identified it doesn't mean it's not helping the CAR T therapy. We don't know.
No, that's really the beauty of science is, like, you don't know what you do sometimes, but sometimes one of the most fabulous discoveries kind of happen happenstance, and you have to just dig deeper, lean in and ask, like, well, why is this happening? It's not just something that's not, like, maybe something periphery to your main point, but it's a side curiosity, and you go down that rabbit hole and you figure out, like, oh, wait, something's really interesting is happening.
Could not agree more.
Yeah, I totally agree too. And I would like to, since we have been discussing the publication for half an hour, I would like to open the stage to anyone that wants to ask anything. You can just raise your hand and ask to be to come to the stage as a speaker. If not, you can also write an answer to our thread, and we will read your question. So, yeah, I mean, we still have a little bit more to discuss, because we actually haven't, we've been so excited with the more nerdy part that we haven't actually gone to the part where you actually treat the animals with heart disease and solve and improve the heart function.
Sure. So I'll, as you are getting your questions together, you know, I hope we can spend more time on discussing implications and future applications and questions you guys have, because that's, you know, more fascinating to me. So I'll briefly wrap up what we found. Essentially, we injure these animals by giving them a high blood pressure. This is a known model of driving heart failure, which is just a decrease in function. We give a single dose of these targeted lipid nanoparticles, so a single wave of activated fibroblast killing CAR Ts. And we see really good functional improvement. So the heart beats with less stress. It's easier for the heart to beat. And also there is, when we actually look at the tissue, there is less fibrosis or extracellular matrix. So a few just points that might stimulate your thinking. And, you know, kind of what we're thinking about right now is that we give a single dose of these lipid nanoparticles, but just like the COVID-19 vaccines, we see no reason why you cannot get more than one dose. You might be able to get repeated doses as your injury is more severe, or less dose as you don't need more intervention. You know, we have one antibody on the exterior of these lipid nanoparticles that bring them to T cells. That's not the only antibody out there in the world. And you can, you know, potentially think about targeting other cells besides T cells. You can obviously change out the mRNA. We use it to code for this custom receptor, but you could, you know, deliver to T cells mRNA that's encoding something completely different. You know, it to me, it feels a little bit like the world is our oyster and we can really, you know, do whatever we want. And there's so many fascinating ideas that, you know, we don't have time or money or bandwidth to really follow out all of the different exciting implications. So I think I'll leave it there because I'd rather hear what everyone else is thinking than what I'm thinking, because I've thought about this project a lot over the last 3 years, as I'm sure you could imagine.
Yeah, Lawrence, you joined as a speaker. Welcome on stage. Would you like to ask a question?
Hi. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much for hosting this, Stefano and Jane. And thank you very much for your work, Joel. I definitely want to hear more about the implications. You teased us a little bit at the beginning, especially about the implications of these T cells kind of retaining that information, maybe the FAP or other stuff from those fibroblasts. What do you see as implications there?
Yeah, so I think I hear two parts to your question. One about the implications outside of just heart failure, and also the implications of retained FAP in these CAR T cells. I think that's what I heard you ask. So both great questions. So first, the retention of FAP within CAR T cells depends upon the CAR being expressed. What we have seen is that with genetic permanent engineering of CAR T cells, the FAP is seen in the spleen for a lot longer, on the order of weeks to months. But if we give the lipid nanoparticle based, you know, transient CAR T cell, we only see FAP expressed for a few days and then it is gone from the spleen. And we think not really retained in those, you know, the now normal T cells that were once briefly targeting the activated fibroblasts.
So the FAP is somehow bound to the CD5. So if they're not expressing, or actually not to the CD5,
right.
What is the other protein that binds to FAP, right? So you're right. Giving the mRNA for that protein, and yep. As long as that is not expressed anymore, then the FAP is not displayed on the
correct
membrane. Okay.
Yeah. So you highlight a bit of confusion that I've always had because, and I still struggle with presenting this in the clearest way, because we talk about targeting at two levels. So first,
right,
we
so you
use CD5 to target the lipid nanoparticle to the T cell. And then the T cell then is transformed to target the activated fibroblast. And so I've been trying to come up with a better phrasing to put two different verbs for each process, right? So then it's a little bit less confusing which targeting we're talking about. But yeah, you nailed it at the end. The FAP retention depends on the CAR expression.
So do you have a name for the protein that targets FAP?
Yes, so that is called the FAP CAR. So
FAP-CAR. Okay,
C-A-R. And the CAR that stands for chimeric antigen receptor.
Yeah,
and that's a whole class of receptors. Others are, you know, CD19. Then there are, you know, in the cancer clinic, there's probably 80 different targets.
And then on the actual LNP, you somehow have some antibodies that bind to CD5.
Correct. Yep. And CD5
and what are those
is
called?
Normally. So these are IgG-based antibodies. So this is a normal... this is a normal style of antibody that the body produces, and we take advantage of them often in research. There are a bunch of clinically approved therapeutics that are based on antibodies as well. So if it's it's commonly used in a bunch of different clinics for many different indications. So we just attach those antibodies onto the outside of the lipid nanoparticle with fairly simple chemistry.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, I'll think about ideas on how to name them
more. Thank you. Yeah, let me know. And before I forget to say, I appreciate each one of you guys being here. Thank you so much. And if you have any questions or comments, you know, in a week or in a month, you know, I am more than happy to answer and to think about things as a group. You know, you can find me on Twitter, and my email is fairly readily available as well.
Well, we're so fortunate to have you here. Thank you so much, Joel, for coming on and talking about your amazing paper. And
yeah, I guess course.
in the last 15 minutes, I'd love to hear more about like next steps. You've been thinking about this for 3 years. Would you like to give us the top three, maybe?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, anybody interrupt if you have further questions, I'd be happy to take those. Or I can, you know, talk about things that we think are exciting. You know, as I kind of alluded to, we think that this activated fibroblast process is not unique to the heart or to the heart fibroblasts. So pick your favorite chronic injury. You know, we're interested. We think it's a fairly consistent end product of a lot of different diseases in many different organs. Another thing we're working on is making better lipid nanoparticles. The one we use in this study was engineered for vaccines. So it has a lot of just general pro-inflammatory characteristics to it based on the types of lipids that are in it. And this is great for vaccines because for them, you know, you want to elicit a strong response against the peptide. So, you know, for me and hopefully many others, that's the spike protein of the COVID-19 virus. So you want to elicit a big immune response. But in a lot of failing organs, including the heart, there really is already damaging inflammation. And so we're working on creating different LMPs that are better suited to this application, that are a little less immunogenic. So another thing that I'll touch on briefly that I think this group will be very interested in, you know, CAR-Ts against fibroblasts are great, but pick your favorite cell type that you think is causing disease, and there is a chance that you can make a custom antibody or a custom CAR construct against and to eliminate those pathogenic cells. So in aging, there's the concept of senescent cells. These are cells that are really kind of no longer participating in their chosen biology as well as they should be, and they're kind of hanging out, taking up space, and maybe not participating as strongly as they should be to you know, homeostasis of the organ. This happens during aging normally. And really, you know, the question that we and others independently of us have asked is, are those cells, the senescent cells, different enough that you could make an engineered cell therapy against them and eliminate them? And this is exactly what Scott Lowe and others have showed. So they made a CAR construct against a protein antigen called UPAR that is selectively expressed on some senescent cells, although it's not a perfect marker. So they demonstrated increased liver function in aged mice with a single injection of UPAR targeting CAR T cells. So we think that type of idea has really significant merit. And maybe you can even merge the two technologies and deliver, instead of mRNA instructing the anti-activated fibroblast CAR, and deliver instead a mRNA that will tell the T cells to target senescent cells. Unfortunately, it's not easy to pick the target antigen, like what you're actually attacking, because it needs to be selectively expressed on the cells that you want to eliminate and nowhere else in the body. So it's a bit hard to find stuff that's really unique. Although there was an exciting paper that came out last week that used another new CAR design against a cancer a neoantigen, and then used an HLA blocking receptor. So you needed both the positive killer signal to be expressed on the target cell, but you also needed a removal or a loss of that normal blocking receptor. So stuff like that really is starting to get, you know, the crazy ideas out there that are starting to come in parallel are really exciting for narrowing down exactly which cells you want to target. And Jane, I think your hand is raised. So I will yield the floor.
Thanks. I also have another question to get your thoughts. And also Karina Moore was this postdoc from the Lo Lab, and now she's starting her new lab at Cold Spring Harbor Labs, and she's going to be doing like senolytic CAR T cells full time. So super cool to see what she brings out. My question to you is, so the basis of CAR T cell is that you take the patient's own T cells and you re-engineer them. But as we age, you know, we get older, our T cells also are a bit less, you know, functional because their T cells also age. The thymus where T cells mature, like also shrinks with age. So in your mouse model, when in your cardiovascular mouse model, you're using like probably relatively young mice, right? And you're inducing cardiac damage. So do you think about how in an older patient, maybe they're not having as functional T cells. Maybe we might have to re-engineer their T cells to be a bit more like feisty, if you will.
Absolutely. You know, it's really important in aging. And I think that's, you know, there's a lot of what we call chicken and the egg arguments, you know, which came first? Is the senescent cells the problem and they're dampening down the immune system, or is the immune system losing its vigor, its spunk and its spark? And therefore that allows the senescent cells to kind of hang out longer than they should. I totally agree. You know, if I had to put my money down, I'd say that the T cells are wearing out first and allowing, you know, other senescent cells to build up, and that, you know, we really should be concerned with the aging of the immune system and the loss of function there. But I think that, you know, one thing that's particularly exciting to me with this targeted lipid nanoparticle delivery system is that not every single transcript of mRNA needs to be the same. So we have loaded these lipid nanoparticles exclusively with the instructions to make the FAP CAR, but there's no reason to say you cannot add, you know, 70% FAP CAR T cell and 30% of a stimulatory peptide or a, you know, some form of a blocking peptide that, you know, can help these T cells activate. We've also considered injecting adjuvants, which are just ways of boosting the immune system prior to introducing these targeted lipid nanoparticles, say the week before. So I think there is a lot of different options, and it's definitely something that's on our radar. As a quick aside, I guess, in traditional CAR T cell therapy, as you infuse the gene edited product into the recipient, you have to actually lymphodeplete them before you add in the T cells, so there is somewhere to go. So that's another advantage of our in vivo delivery system, is that you avoid the irradiation required to get CAR T cells in the traditional manufacturing sense to seed in the patient.
Yeah, that I just wanted to, because we have had a question through our DMs, and I just wanted read it here. We have a listener basically asking if this system with the CAR T cells eating the fibroblasts can also act on the fibrosis that is already there, so the fibers of collagen that are already deposited. Are you seeing actually these solving of the fibrosis already established, or is it more?
Right. So, you know, this is a thing that I think about all the time. You know, we're killing a cell, and then the extracellular, the non-cell portion, that structural scaffolding, that's what's really changing. And in our model, we do see an actual change in the extracellular matrix after these cells have been eliminated. We think that that happens for a number of reasons. The two main ones are, first is a macrophage. So macrophages are a really strong component of the immune system. They like to gobble up and eat all sorts of dead and dying things, but they can also remodel the extracellular space on their own. And we think that they're recruited during cardiac injury and after all these cells are lysed, and that they're playing a big role in the cleanup of the extracellular space. That's one component. I think another main component is the other fibroblasts. So what we're targeting and eliminating is a very small subset of fibroblasts. And I would guess more than 90% are left alone and left to keep doing their job. And the fibroblast job in the uninjured organ is to constantly remodel, both by laying down new extracellular matrix, but also by remodeling and taking up the old extracellular matrix. And it's a very dynamic process with constant turnover. So I think when we eliminate the problematic activated fibroblasts that are creating the overwhelming abundance of extracellular matrix, that once those, you know, kind of worst offenders are gone, that lets the macrophages and the homeostatic, the normal fibroblasts, keep doing their job and remodel the tissue over time as a part of their normal function. That's what we think is happening. We haven't absolutely explicitly tested these hypotheses yet.
I also have another question, if I may. Sure. Nobody else is raising their hand. So what about, have you thought about commercialization pathways?
For sure. Yeah, it's a good question. So we, you know, I have not commercialized this at all myself, although other members of the team have. They are in the process of making this a viable therapeutic and getting this towards phase one clinical trials. That's all I can really say at this point, but it is happening without me, and for that I'm kind of grateful, because I am personally more interested in the science than in the business aspect, but that is just my personal feelings. There are others on our team that are, you know, interested in the business aspect, and, you know, this certain individual I'm thinking of is really concerned with helping people, and this person has seen the dramatic clinical burden, and they're really passionate about, you know, about helping patients and hoping that this gets through to the end where it's actually a benefit to society, because we think that it'll be fairly easy to mass manufacture and distribute widely to those that need, and there hopefully will not there's hopefully going to be an elimination of the current manufacturing barriers to CAR T therapy that really limit, you know, its distribution to rich countries and rich patients, which to me is a disappointment.
Yeah, so these LNPs were injected in somewhere around the heart?
These were directed directly injected into the circulation. Intravenous, and they'll find the T cells in circulation, and then
How come you saw the results in the heart and not in that other, because that's where most of the fibrosis was happening.
Correct. Okay, yeah. So that's where the injury is. Mm-hmm. And the T cells, once they're expressing this chimeric antigen receptor, will home in on the injured areas. So for us, that's the heart. But the mRNA delivery happens in circulation.
Okay, I also sent a tweet, by the way, if you want to look at it sometime, regarding CAR NK cells for killing senescent cells.
Yeah, and that brings a good point. You know, T cells are not the only interesting cell components in the immune system. You know, there are other cells that can be taken advantage of, just like NK cells, macrophages, what are called gamma delta T cells, which is a special form. There's, you know, the possibilities are very exciting right now.
Yeah, I know we are already in the hour. Jill, I don't know if you can take one more question, because we have Robert that has requested to be a speaker. Yes, Robert.
Yeah, I'm good for a few more minutes. So whoever wants to hang out and chat, I could talk all afternoon, although I probably should do some bench work.
Hello.
Hi, Robert.
Yeah. Okay, so I'd asked the question in the DM about the fibrosis, and I had another question about eating away the scar tissue. So if someone has a stroke, they usually are going to have scar tissue left in the brain, and it's going to be, you know, like impossible to remove with surgery. Would this therapy be able to get past the blood brain barrier and eat that fibrotic tissue that's in the brain?
Yeah, that's a fascinating idea. I don't think we have considered stroke yet. So traditionally in homeostasis, so that, you know, normal uninjured biology, the T cells don't really get across the blood-brain barrier, as it kind of sounds like you already know. But after strong injuries, there is some crossing of T cells into the blood, into the brain, into the CNS. So I mean, I'm a little scared of releasing a reactive cell into the brain. That's a bit terrifying to me. But experimentally, I don't necessarily know that it won't work on paper. I think, you know, one of our attitudes is to say, like, if, you know, if it makes sense and our antigen is expressed, it might be worth trying. So I'll have to think about that. That's a good idea, Robert. Thank you.
I think that there are some CAR T cells for like glioblastoma, which is a cancer of the brain. So I think that, I mean, I'm not an expert on it, but I know there's been discussion about can CAR T cells penetrate the blood brain barrier. I think the answer is sometimes, but I haven't looked at the literature in a while.
Yeah. But, yeah, the answer is sometimes after injury, of which glioblastoma is sufficient. And I would assume stroke is as well. That's interesting. I like this idea.
Thank you.
Certainly an unmet need.
Yeah.
Thank you for your question, Robert. And thank you so much, Joel. Everyone give Joel a follow. He's clearly thinking about a lot of cool things, doing a lot of things. So follow him. Make sure you're up to date on what his latest endeavors are. And we're so thankful to have you join us today for Journal Club. Your paper is so cool. I have so many questions. So maybe I'll chat with you later offline, too. Maybe we'll do a round two.
Sure.
But thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, so many fun brainstorming ideas. And Estefana, or Joel, any last words?
Thank you all for being here. I appreciate your time in listening. I appreciate you know, being invited. It's been a real joy of mine to watch other people see the paper and understand why it's cool. You know, I can talk with people and get them excited about the idea, but the fact that it's gone out into the world and kind of grown even beyond what I expected it to be, and received in a way that people understand why we're so passionate about it and interested. It's been pretty special. So thank you guys. And thank you all for being here.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Joel. Again, it's been a real joy. And I think it was a great paper, and again, super easy to understand, super easy to see the potential. And we have had a lot of participation today, a lot of great ideas, and I think it's great. It's a sign that putting an idea out there and allowing others to build on it can be great. And that's a little bit what we want to do with BetaDAO, making everybody an actor in science, in particular in longevity science. And thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
And yeah, thank you everybody that has participated. I think it's time to wrap up. But yeah, I can't wait to see you again in a couple of weeks. We will have another guest that I will announce soon, but it has to do with the microbiome and aging. So it's actually a fascinating topic, and I cannot wait to see you there. Thank you so much, everybody. It's been a great discussion. And yeah, enjoy. See you all.